episode of Back to Reality. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The birthday of Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, marks the greatest celebration in history. 2016. Imam Khamenei. Among the stars that you see, there are some which are galaxies and are thousands of times larger than the one we see in summer nights. A galaxy is a collection of thousands of solar systems and suns. The Holy Prophet was like a galaxy, and he had thousands of virtues which shone brightly like a star. In him, knowledge is accompanied by morality, government is accompanied by wisdom, worshipping God is accompanied by serving people, jihad is accompanied by mercy, love of God is accompanied by love of his creatures, pride is accompanied by modesty, being up to date is accompanied by foresight, honesty is accompanied by complexity. In political matters, attention to God is accompanied by attention to peace and health. Attention to worldly matters is accompanied by attention to spiritual matters, and pursuing divine goals is accompanied by pursuing human goals. He is a perfect example of a human being, and God Almighty has not created a person who is as perfect as him. And he is a bearer of good news, and he is a warner. He knows what all humanity is doing, and he knows everything that happens in history. He is the person who invites all humanity to get close to God, and he is a shining beacon of guidance for humanity. Surely we have sent you as a witness, and as a bearer of good news, and as a warner, and as one inviting to Allah by His permission, and as a light-giving torch. The Holy Quran, chapter 33, verses 45 and 46.
Subhanallah, hamdan lillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah.
Under the Prophet's rule, Muslims reached the peak of global civilizations. The Holy Prophet ﷺ carried the message of knowledge, yet there was no knowledge in that society. He carried the message of justice, yet there was no trace of justice in that society, and powerful people and bullying rulers dominated people's lives and possessions. He was the messenger of morality, lenience, forgiveness, justice, and kindness, yet that society was devoid of such characteristics in the real sense of the word. The society was full of unkind, bullying, immoral, ignorant, and prejudiced people who were unjustifiably arrogant and who had their hearts set on carnal desires. It was in such tough and fanatic conditions and in such a dry desert that the Holy Prophet ﷺ grew up. And this 13-year period finally ended in the establishment of the Prophet's rule. He formed a community on the basis of monotheism, knowledge, justice, morality, ethics, and generosity.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Destroying everything, everything that's dear to me. I can never be like you. You are the wicked of this world. You are the reason why we feel fear in our daily lives.
It's not about killing, it's about life and sharing. Life with someone. Yes, faith is not about killing, it's about life and sharing. Life and making a difference. Yeah, making a difference.
Don't involve. Don't involve them, Dad. Welcome, dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you for joining us. Please stay with us over the next hour for another selection of meaningful and enriching programs. We begin with Spotlight, a daily current affairs program that casts a careful eye on today's most significant international developments. Each episode features a roundtable discussion with two expert guests offering informed analysis and commentary. If you're looking to stay engaged with global events, this is your essential listen. Later, we bring you another segment of Radio Productions offering thoughtfully prepared audios, features designed to inform, inspire, and reflect. Up next is Spotlight. Stay with us.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order Friday to rebrand the Department of Defense as the Department of War, a throwback to the department's original name used from 1789 to 1947. The symbolic rebranding goes in contrast with Trump's repeated claims to be an anti-war president who campaigned on promises to end conflicts and avoid new wars. Trump has even courted many allied leaders, making the case that he more than any other world leader deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, the rebranding, the message it sends and the message it doesn't send, and other contradictions involved, we'll try to cover in our Spotlight program. But first, this report from the U.S. Capitol.
Executive order you will authorize.
Billionaire businessman turned politician Donald Trump has rebranded the Department of Defense to the Department of War, in a move which many say lays bare the belligerent nature of the nation's military branch. President Trump says that's entirely the point.
In 1789, the Department of War was created, but it was renamed to the Department of Defense in 1947. Trump effectively said that the name change could erase the stigma of America's losing military record since World War II.
We won World War I, we won World War II, we won everything before, and as I said, we won everything in between. And we were very strong, but we never fought to win. We just didn't fight to win. We didn't lose anything, but we didn't fight to win. We could have won every one of those wars quickly. But they went a route that I think was probably politically correct, but not correct for our nation. So I think the Department of War sends a signal.
There has been widespread criticism that the name change portrays the United States as warmongering and as a perpetual threat to international stability. Some veterans turned political activists agree that the change is nothing if not more honest.
It's honest, at least, of the direction that Trump wants to take our military in and use it as a force for destruction, even more so than it has in the past. So I appreciate the Trump administration's honesty in this one instance. And I just would hope that more Americans start to see what exactly Trump wants to use this military for, and stand up and push back against that.
Well, they say it's because the military should be focused on lethality and things like that, and offensive actions and things like that. But that's always what the U.S. military has been, right? So it's kind of accurate, right? And when has the Department of Defense been for defense of this nation? Like, when you think back of the conflicts, it's usually us projecting our power forward in places that I personally think we shouldn't be.
Critics have focused on the cost the rebranding will likely create, but it seems there's always money for the U.S. military. If the United States Department of War was a nation, its $850 billion annual budget would make it the 20th largest economy in the world. Some conservative congresspeople said they hoped the name change would lead to spending, quote, substantially more on our military, while many Democrats said the action underscores the falseness of Trump's often anti-war campaign promises. Ramin Mazahari, Washington, D.C.
And now for our guests. Joining us, Dr. Wilmer Leon, political scientist from Washington, D.C. in the States. And Mr. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Fredericton, Canada. Gentlemen, pleasure to have you both on the program here. I guess, Dr. Wilmer Leon, we'll start with you, sir. Good to see you and speak to you after quite some time. It's been where I've checked in with you. So what happened, sir? Trump was supposed to be different than the Iraq and Afghanistan invader and occupier. He helps attack Iran. He's attacked Yemen. He's helped the most extreme voices in Israel ditch peace efforts and possible ceasefire to continue to fund full-blown genocide and possible even colonization of Gaza. How do you process this rebranding now of his Defense Department?
Well, this is really just a reflection of the difference between fact and fiction. Donald Trump loves to talk in fiction, and what we see here are facts. He claims to be desperately searching for a Nobel Prize. He changes the name of the Department of Defense to the Department of War, and then he writes on social media that Chicago, an American city, is about to find out why it's called the Department of War. Well, that violates the Constitution. There are so many contradictions here that it makes your head spin. It doesn't really matter what it's called if the substantive policies that result from it are the same. There's a line from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. That means that the inherent nature or qualities of a thing are not changed by the name that it's given. It won't change the U.S. record in international conflict. The U.S. hasn't won anything since World War II, and without the Soviet Union and China's involvement, we wouldn't have won that. These are the empty gestures of a wild, erratic, demented mind. He wants to be an authoritarian, hence his actions in Los Angeles, in Washington, D.C., now what he's threatening in Chicago, and they just murdered 11 people off the coast of Venezuela. The record speaks for itself.
And I'm going to actually come back to you in about a second and speak about those 11 people. I'm glad you mentioned that, Dr. Leon. John Bosnich, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the conversation. Same opening question to you, John, if you may. What happened to the peacemaker so-called candidate, the one that claimed endless wars are ruining America and Americans have had enough and deserve better?
Well, I agree with the first commentator today that the name change makes no substantive difference whatsoever in what is being done around the world by the U.S. empire. I think that we would have to hear more from Trump about why he felt it was necessary to change the name. But the key point here is that it looks like Trump is just not going to attempt in any way to operate as business as usual the way it's been ever since World War II. Trump is accusing his opponents of having lied, of having used USAID as a method of overthrowing other governments, of stealing resources, and yet he himself now is attempting to steal Gaza from the Palestinians and to turn it into some kind of a resort. So we're really going to have to wait and see what this means. Is it just some makeup and some appearance posturing? Is it a PR move? Or is Trump actually trying to reshape the government of the United States in a manner which serves his interests, which simply are not clear to us? I'm a political analyst, and I have been for decades, and I have to tell you, it's opaque. What is happening in the White House is opaque. I cannot see through it. And the people who are inside the White House, there are thousands of people who work around the White House and in the White House, they themselves say to me, off the record, that they don't know why the name change took place. So it's as good a guess yours as mine.
And I'm glad, Dr. Leon, that John mentioned the word opaque, because that's going to bring me to what you mentioned earlier, the 11 people that were killed in that small boat off of Venezuelan waters. That was the rebranding came just a couple days after that deadly U.S. Navy strike, where those 11 people on that small vessel were killed in international waters near Venezuela, which the military said involved a drug vessel. Now, some legal experts have questioned the legality of that strike under international law. And right after it, we saw 7 U.S. warships and 1 nuclear-powered fast attack submarine sent down there to the Caribbean, close to Latin American waters and Venezuela. My question to you, when the number one epidemic, drug epidemic on U.S. soil that Trump has admitted to and mentioned a few times comes from not cocaine from South America's, but from fentanyl from Mexico, what is he doing off the coast of Venezuela?
He's distracting. He's deflecting. He's distracting. That, by all standards, that was no drug boat. You don't have 11 people on a drug boat. First of all, that's too many people that can tell the story in terms of the illicit activities, if in fact it is drugs. If for simple math, if you've got 11 people, you only need one to drive the boat. Say they each weigh 180 pounds. That's 1,800 pounds of people that could be replaced by 1,800 pounds of drugs. So if this is a drug boat, they're not very good businessmen. And there are other elements of this. Where's the evidence? Where's the evidence that it was a drug boat? Usually in these types of interdictions, you stop the boat, you board the boat, you inspect the boat. If in fact there are drugs on the boat, you then take the boat, you seize the boat, you arrest the people on it. None of that happened. Why? Because it probably wasn't a drug boat. With his raising the bounty on the head of the democratically elected president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, from the $25 million that Biden put on his head to now $50 million, and sending ships off the coast of Venezuela, this is the Department of War seeking a fight that they hope they can win. They're getting their hind parts whooped in Ukraine. They're not winning in occupied historic Palestine. They didn't win in their attack on Iran. And so they're searching desperately for a win. And if they mess around in the wrong way in Venezuela, that one won't go well either.
And you hit the nail on the head there. I was hoping you get beyond that they're down there for drugs and that they're down there for regime change and possible war with the Venezuelan government. Thank you there, Dr. Leon. And John, so the U.S. has been at war. I don't know if you know the statistics or you heard of it in the past. 93% of its history, U.S. has reported some time ago via both Wikipedia and some historical news sources, that it's been at war for 222 years out of the 241 years it's existed. So this rebranding, one can argue, is more accurate assessment than defense, that Trump is just pulling off the mask and coming out the closet.
Well, that may be the case. We're going to see very shortly what happens in the wrap-up of all of the conflict in Ukraine. If Trump attempts to play a peacemaker with President Putin of Russia and to draw a line in Ukraine, maybe they will make some kind of a change. But this entire renaming of the Department of Defense as the Department of War is either a good bluff designed to draw attention away from something else, or it's just one of the things on Trump's to-do list from before the election that he said, I'm going to get this done when I'm the president of the United States again. And he's just going through his checklist. How it affects the world, though, I agree also with the comment of the other commentator today that you don't just kill 11 people with a rocket attack or by an air attack. You find out who they are. You arrest them. You see if they actually have any drugs. You give them due process. And once you've done all of that, then you have to take them to trial and presumably find their collaborators, find the people who financed the drug operation, and trace it back to the actual culprits. It's very seldom the people in a drug boat who are the masterminds of the crime. Mm. So I think what we're seeing here is some grandiose posturing, Mar-a-Lago style, and I think that it is going to do very little to convince those of us who thought Trump was going to be the peace president to come to the conclusion that he's anything other than the war president, because he has brought war to the Middle East on a level of casualties and slaughter and genocide that we have never seen before. Mm. A total attack on civilians.
Thank you there, John. And Dr. Wilmer Leone, I'm going to share a quick quote with you from Pete Hegseth, yesterday's Secretary of Defense, today's Secretary of War. He sat in the Oval Office and he said this morning, "We're going to go on offense, not just defense, maximum lethality, not tepid legality, violent effect, not politically correct. We're going to raise up warriors, not just defenders. So this War Department, Mr. President, just like America, is back." So my question to you, let's get beyond the Department of War label. Let's go back to the Department of Defense. When was the U.S. actually a true, honest defender for even an honest minute in its history?
To my knowledge, I don't know that it ever has been. It's always been an empire. And this is what empires do. And this is what usually brings about the end of the empire, is excessive expansion. And what I think we're seeing here, there is the proverb that says the last kicks of the dying mule are the most dangerous. And so there are, I think, a couple of different approaches to this analysis. One is you can look at it in the historic context of the United States, to which your last question takes us. And the answer is the United States has always been expansive. The United States has always been empirical, has, especially since World War II, has been a hegemon. And the global dynamic is now changing from the unipolar to the multipolar reality. And reality is very important for people to understand. You can also approach this from the psychosis of Donald Trump. A forensic psychiatrist and violence expert, Dr. Bandy Lee, and a number of her colleagues, other health professionals, 8 years ago issued a dire warning saying that Trump was mentally unfit to remain in the presidency, and in doing so amounts to a public health crisis. Hmm. And what we're seeing now in the global context is a world health crisis. They murdered 11 people a couple of days ago and are saying, what is little Marco Rubio saying? Pish posh. What? It matters not that they murdered 11 people.
And 20,000 children in Gaza on top of the 64,000 killed since October 2023. John, this case of both the genocidal Zionist leader Benjamin Netanyahu claims Trump deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson agrees after Trump's controversial deployment of a National Guard to the streets of the U.S. Capitol, saying it resulted in no murders over the past 2 weeks, something that did not stand up to a simple fact check. Now, these are just a few voices among many, agree that Donald Trump deserves to be nominated. Do you agree or disagree? And please explain your choice.
Well, I haven't seen anything that would suggest to me that Donald Trump is deserving of the post of being the world's leading peacemaker. There's no such evidence. His war on the civilians of Gaza completely disproves that. The theatrical renaming of the Department of Defense as the Department of War doesn't give one a good indication of peace is coming. And I think that we are seeing a level of posturing here that is designed on purpose to confuse not just us, the commentators and analysts, but the American public and the designated enemies of America, such as Venezuela, such as Iran, such as Russia, such as China, such as perhaps even India. I think that we are coming to the head here, and I do agree that the old saying from the Bible, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. If America keeps twisting itself into a mega military power and attempts to flex its muscles and to expect the entire world to roll over and play dead, they're going to have another thing coming, because the world will unite against this hegemon, and it will unite against the flexing of muscles against a planet that's trying to make peaceful progress together.
Yeah, well put. And Dr. Leon, if you could also weigh in on that, more Nobel Peace Prize supporters for Trump, the Armenian prime minister, the Azerbaijani president for helping diffuse tensions there. The Pakistani government said Trump deserves to be nominated for the prize after de-escalating tensions that help avert all-out war with India. But what did India say? India said Trump had nothing to do with it, and supposedly this has created tensions between Trump and Narendra Modi. Now, he declares the Department of Defense as a Department of War, and then gets upset if you don't agree that, as he is to John's point, an apex peacemaker on the planet.
Well, you don't have to be an international expert to understand, or you don't have to be a psychiatrist like Dr. Bandy Lee to understand that you play to Donald Trump's ego, and that can get you into a lot of places and can get you a lot of things. So, you know, listening to some of these world leaders that are echoing this foolishness about he's deserving of a Nobel Prize, again, they're just playing to the ego of a madman. But I don't think to John's point about the flexing of U.S. muscle, and I think John is absolutely right, but I don't think President Putin is concerned about that. I don't think President Xi is quaking in his boots in Beijing about this. I don't think Sergei Lavrov or Wang Yi, the foreign minister of China, I don't think they're concerned about this. I don't think President, your supreme leader, Khamenei, I don't think he's concerned about this, because they all and you all have much longer views of history to draw upon and to work from. And what did Dr. King say? The moral arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. So I think the leaders that I've mentioned look at this as merely a blip on the radar screen. And final point, honestly, Donald Trump should have changed the name of the Department of State to the Department of War, because since Tony Blinken, they have not been able to spell diplomacy, let alone engage in it. They've been more warmongering than the Department of Defense.
Thank you there, Dr. Leon. We only have about a minute left, John. I really need to be quick on this last weigh-in. The message this sends, especially to U.S. allies, who are just basically tired of putting up with policies that have led to so many wars that they've been dragged into, oftentimes against their own will. And now with the Ukraine on their borders, and they're also on the precipice of more conflict, possibly in Taiwan, possibly in South America, coupled with Trump's tariff wars that targeted most of them, it seems these decisions are just pushing away America's closest friends.
Well, I do agree that that's the effect, and I actually think that that's the intent. I think Trump tried to eliminate NATO and to disband the military empire in his first term, and he failed because of the deep state and because of people like Blinken and other people inside the State Department. And now he is going to make it impossible for the European powers to stay allied with America unless they want to pay through the nose and give over the majority of their national budget to turn America into a country of war and not just having a department of war.
Great stuff, gentlemen. Appreciate having you both on. Thank you sincerely to both of you for joining us. Dr. Wilmer Leone there joining us from the U.S. Capitol. Also, Mr. John Boston is joining us from Fredericton, Canada. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Tümen. Yani...
Bazaar.
Plants grow and give fruits and flowers when they are in the most ideal circumstances. Proper amount of sun, water, soil conditions, and the right temperature are all the ingredients for a happy plant to grow and do what it does best. These days, being a successful farmer is a much more complicated and demanding profession than in the past. Farmers today not only need to have great agricultural skills, but they also must have exceptional technological and marketing expertise. And the most recent trend in farming are greenhouses.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In this program, we will explore new developments in Iran's vast agriculture industry while shining the spotlight on greenhouses. We wanted to see what all the fanfare is about with this type of farming. Plus, we will also check out how it's making profits in the agriculture sector. So plant yourself in a comfortable seat and let's start the show.
Our journey began at Farakish the Parsian. This company has been around for decades and has a rich history of activity in livestock rearing and farming. Some years ago, it launched a new business specializing in high-tech hydroponic greenhouses. It's an indoor farm with greenhouses built on many hectares of land. Mainly, it grows three types of produce and a variety of tomatoes, peppers, and lettuce. Each year, it may focus on growing a single type of crop, such as peppers. They have perfected Mother Nature indoors through a combination of science and technology married with farming. The goal is to provide sustainable indoor farming solutions that optimize the use of natural resources. Hydroponic greenhouses grow crops in nutrient-rich water, so water management is at the heart of this company. The structures are created with state-of-the-art irrigation systems. Also, rainwater is collected and distributed to plants. Drainage from the plants is gathered in pools where it undergoes a purification process to remove contaminants, then recycled back into the system. But that's not all. Special ventilation systems control temperature and air circulation. The greenhouses are equipped with shades to control natural light, plus they are fitted with heating and cooling systems. This type of farming comes at a time when the country is witnessing unprecedented heat and water shortages, partially because of outdated agricultural practices. This type of farming is growing in popularity. The technical term for hydroponic farming is controlled environmental agriculture, or simply indoor farming. These greenhouses create precise growing conditions using technological advances like digital monitoring that draw out the best flavors and textures in produce. And they can be built almost anywhere. Aside from being a major producer itself, this company offers its hydroponic technology to farmers and growers. Plus, it helps them plant their own greenhouses. It gets its seedlings from its own massive nursery. The seeds are hybrids that are imported. Using hybrid seeds helps grow crops that match international quality, which is beneficial when exporting their produce. This company collaborates with research and academic institutions for agricultural research of cash crops, such as saffron and blueberries. The company stands on the threshold of exporting its produce and welcomes foreign investments to expand its activities. As part of their future vision, they are creating a program for on-site training, which helps users of hydroponic technology in glass greenhouses. Additionally, it is developing lodging and accommodation for national and international agritourists. The most recent addition to their line of work is a packing facility, which packages produce and readies them for market distribution. While the U.S. sanctions do not directly cover the agriculture sector, they have indirectly impacted businesses in this industry. Much of the technology used in this company is imported or has spare parts that need to be imported. The sanctions have hindered international money transfers, making imports and even exports of produce for this company difficult. As you might know, open land farming is vulnerable to environmental changes. Droughts, cold spells, heat waves, and soil erosion all impact harvests. The agriculture sector not only plays a big role in managing food security, but also is a big contributor to the Iranian economy. In recent years, water shortages have slowed development in this sector, which has gained the attention of government officials. The Ministry of Agriculture defines several programs to develop greenhouses to tackle drought conditions. Right now, the total greenhouse area in the country stands at around 21,000 hectares. Government officials want to increase this amount to 25,000 by the end of the year. This will help support plans of the Ministry of Agriculture to transfer vegetable farms to greenhouses. The main objective is to save 10 billion cubic meters of water annually. Many of these greenhouses are set up in agriculture parks inside free trade zones. In fact, in the Northwest, Aras Free Trade Zone opened one of the biggest hydroponic greenhouse complexes in West Asia. The goal is to increase productions for exports. For this reason, agri-parks have a major role in developing technology to support efficient indoor farming. The government provided nearly $200 million worth of funds for creating agricultural parks and greenhouses last year. And this supportive measure has paid off, as over 4 million tons of fruits and vegetables were produced this year from greenhouses. Tehran province is one of the country's biggest producers of greenhouse products. Yazd, West Azerbaijan, Bushehr, and Khorasan provinces also have numerous greenhouses, just to name a few. Iranian agriculture has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. It was one of the only sectors that was barely impacted by the global coronavirus outbreak. Agriculture is not limited to cultivation and farming alone. It also includes
dairy, poultry, beekeeping, aquaculture, and so much more. It is considered a strategic sector where goods are enhanced with added value through processing, promotion, and distribution.
Agriculture makes up 8% of Iran's GDP and employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. Iran's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports last year. That's according to the Ministry of Agriculture. Figures from the ministry show Iran has over 18 million hectares of arable land. And last year, nearly 130 million tons of agro products were produced in farmlands. Iran's agro industry is worth billions. Data from Iran's Customs Administration show the value of the country's agricultural exports rose by around 3% this year. Its figures also reveal Iran exported some 5 million tons of agricultural products worth nearly $3 billion this year. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list was pistachio, selling off roughly $540 million worth of nuts. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture products also generated $1 billion in exports.
All right, everyone, it is time for me to step aside for several minutes as my good friend and colleague is about to take you on another educational adventure. Enjoy.
In a world where our lives are becoming increasingly intertwined with the zeros and ones. We transfer money, we call our friends, and we do our shopping using these two magic numbers that form the foundation of the virtual yet real world that's called IT. Today, I'll walk you around this Iranian company that has a lot to say when it comes to the IT sector. Here, only the impossible is impossible. The motto, which Ida Bonyane Mobtakere Pars has set its targets on, the Iranian brand develops a range of IT and ICT products, from apps and websites to educational content. The idea of launching such a business was developed more than a decade and a half ago in the mind of its CEO, when he was just a high school student. E-commerce is one of the amazing outcomes of the digital space. The emergence of online shopping has provided an instant link between customers and sellers, where customers can easily window shop and get their hands on their desired items in a tap of a finger. Minikala is the name of a newbie online shopping app that's developed by the thriving brand. In less than 2 years, the number of Minikala users is rapidly approaching 500K. Ida Bonyane Mobtakere Pars is an umbrella company that has under its belt a range of startups, producing apps with different purposes, from money management apps to shopping and medical applications. This is what makes this firm stand out from the ever-growing number of rivals in Iran. Digital marketing is a newbie business in Iran, but still, there are many companies, Iranian companies, who have stepped into the realm of the digital marketing or e-commerce. Despite its adverse effect on the global economy, when it comes to digital marketing, the coronavirus pandemic was a blessing, making the online space the safest possible channel for people to get their hands on different products. And this company says it fares even better during the pandemic. With a dedicated team, bringing together more than 150 highly driven programmers, Mobtakere says it tries to expand the scope of its activity based on the needs of the day. Otherwise, it would stay behind in the fast-paced market.
Many thanks for that awesome report. And that wraps up our show for today. Until next time, take care. We'll see you again on another episode of Bazaar.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Salam.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhi.